Welcome, welcome, welcome. How's everybody doing? Hope you are doing well. My name is Andrew Kuhn with Focus Compounding, on air live with Jeff Gannon. Jeff, how's it going today?
It's going very well, Andrew. How's it going with you?
It's going great. We hope it's going great with everybody else as well. If this is the first time you're tuning in with us, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to check out all of our content that we push out into the investing universe. Best way to do that is to follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Focused Compound. If you want to get access to investment write-ups from Jeff going all the way back to 2005, go to focuscompound.com and you could get access to all of that for free. All the information is in the description below. So we are recording this today, February 29th. It is a leap year day. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And we haven't done a free form podcast in quite some time, Jeff.
Okay.
So we're going to talk a little bit about what's been going on in the market this year. We've been doing a lot of timeless content. So we're going to sprinkle in some timely content and talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on in the markets, our thoughts. Oddly enough, I think these are our listeners' favorite podcasts that we do. They tend to get the most views, I will say.
Okay.
If they're voting with their dollars, if they're voting with their viewership. But here we are, February 29th. The market is up 7%, at least on a price movement, as you can see on this chart. The S&P 500. Seems like things are starting to heat up a little bit. I'm getting 2021 vibes a little bit. Yeah. Pretty interesting. Interest rates are still high-ish. We're at 4.25 on the 10-year. There's still this talk of the soft landing and where interest rates will be. Kind of get into that a little bit. Just wanted, though, to check your temperature a little bit, Jeff. See what your thoughts are in the market, where we are. We are, like I said, it's February 29th, and just kind of get your opinion on where we're at. NVIDIA and Mag 7 has continued to trounce forward. I'm getting 2021 vibes here, but wanted to hear your thoughts. We could jump.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess we talked at the end of December about things. I said, you know, the things I said were people probably underestimating the possibility of a no landing scenario, and that I would be negative on the Magnificent Seven versus the market. Well, Magnificent Seven's done quite well versus the market. I guess something, I mean, I guess like NVIDIA has done really well, and something like Tesla probably hasn't done amazingly or something. But a big thing that has changed, probably not big, but since we talked, is that the expectation for rate cuts is lower and further out now, and the possibility of a no landing type thing is probably higher. Sticky inflation stuff, real GDP now type forecasts of things, all of that are high, higher probably than what people were counting on. And so people have moved back estimates for when rates will be cut and how much they might be cut by. And so that's left the curve inverted.
Yeah. So we're going on, how long has the yield curve been inverted for? I mean, almost very 2 years
long.
Now?
Yeah.
Longest in history? Time.
I would assume it's got to be at this point. Yeah, I mean, I guess the depth and stuff is probably not as great as about 43 years ago or something. There might have been one that was deeper, but I don't know that this one could be shorter at this point. Although I guess they would have written articles about it if it's the longest ever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What about, so you had said that they pushed back the interest rate cuts and the expectations there. Why do you think the market has just kind of shrugged that off? Is that the byproduct of, just the Mag 7 and making up so much of the market and continuing to push on forward?
No idea. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I feel like Buffett did when he shut down the fund and stuff. I don't know that, and we talked a little bit about that with the Buffett letter thing, is like, you know, the resurgence of these things is interesting. I mean, money supply growth is like nothing right now.
Yeah,
loan growth is like nothing. It's basically flat if you look, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 24. Like, it's basically flat to nothing, and especially in real terms and stuff, which normally would not be amazing for like a stock market or something. And not great for a financial system that you're growing. Like, nominal growth is very, the gap between nominal growth and actual growth in money supply, lending, stuff like that is huge. It's really big. So companies are, and the economy is going ahead as if it's growing at 6-7% a year to maybe 4-5% on the low end estimates of it, depending on how you measure different predictions about inflation and GDP. But let's say 4-7% or something, while you've got money supply growth and stuff at basically zero. But as we talked about before, it depends on how these things are used. It was always a big thing that people said there's going to be rampant inflation. This is crazy. This is inflating the financial system, whatever, when the Fed was doing all this quantitative easing and stuff in the past decade. But it's not clear if that does that much initially because of just increasing money supply or something by a lot wouldn't necessarily immediately cause a lot of inflation and stuff. And, you know, like we talked about, deficits and stuff are big. So, and it doesn't look like anyone's interested in closing those deficits. So that'll be fascinating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of stimulation basically. And as we talked about before, even if you look at like, measures that attempt to see if financial conditions are tight or not. The Fed thinks they're tight, but different indexes and stuff of trying to find financial condition stuff actually doesn't show any tightness. It shows that it's looser than normal, not tighter than normal.
What are you using? What are you
like? There's Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index. There's other ones that put it together. It's, you know, I mean, they're all incredibly arbitrary, but they're. And they do have an equity component to them, not just spreads on credit and stuff. So it could be that the stock market doing well actually causes that to appear that way. But there's also rules of thumb that would suggest it's not as tight as the Fed might think. Like I said, if your short-term rate is not really as high as your nominal growth is, or is about the same, you're probably not that tight because, you know, usually the 10-year or something is not that different than nominal growth. So if your short term isn't higher than where you expect the 10-year to be, then you're not really that tight. So, but that's something that almost every quarter GDPs come in higher than like estimates are. Like if you look at the investment banks and stuff that put out estimates, they end up being lower throughout the quarter than it actually comes in each year, each quarter for a while now. But you know, we've talked about that before. They were slow on the way up, right? Estimates kept going up all the time about the rate that they'd be raising at, and now they've been a bit early on estimating when the cuts will be, and so they're just pushing it out a few months or something. But since we talked in December, I think the estimates have probably been pushed out a couple months. Now I think there's not many people talking about before June, I would think, any cuts, and I don't know that they're talking about much more than 3, you know, 75 basis points or something. It's priced in probably at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And you don't know how much to read in these sorts of things. But you know the quote, people can sell for all sorts of reasons their stock, but they typically only buy for one reason. Seems like every day now we're seeing reports of these titans unloading a lot of stock. So I'm reading right now, Jeff Bezos sold Amazon shares worth $8.5 billion in multiple transactions this month. And again, you don't know how much of this is part of like a predetermined plan or whatever. They're constantly selling. Jamie Dimon sold $150 million in stock last week, which is his first cashing out in a big way since taking the job at JP Morgan 18 years ago. Leon Black, the Walton family sold. Basically all these people that in one way or the other are plugged into the economy in a pretty meaningful way. It seems like you're seeing these reports of people starting to shore up some capital, right? Put some dry powder, sell some stock at pretty high valuations. And again, you can't really read too much into it, but it is interesting. You see guys like Jamie Dimon selling, right? And also you don't know how much of this is just they're older, parts of their career, different point in their career. Jeff Bezos is retired effectively, you know, focusing on other things. So just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think insider arbitrage has sell-buy ratio stuff, things like that, I think. So people could look just for all insiders. Certainly, you know, at least at the beginning of this year, it didn't look very good that there's a lot of sellers for buyers among insiders. I think the ones you described, they're probably selling for their own reasons. but they're less likely to sell whenever there's a big decline in the stock. So you'll notice that like insiders at banks didn't sell during the crisis, what was it, 11 months ago or so, whatever it was now. And so there were some buying, but also there was just stopping of selling. And that could be because they know people can see what they're doing. But it also can be that they don't like to sell when their stock suddenly drops 50% or something, and they're more likely to sell when it's up 50%, you know?
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the FTC suing to block the Kroger Albertsons acquisition?
Yep.
It's the largest supermarket merger in U.S. history, will eliminate competition and raise grocery prices for millions of Americans while harming tens of thousands of workers, FTC alleges.
Mm-hmm.
Not too surprising, given the FTC during the current administration. They don't like mergers. They have blocked a lot of stuff. We've talked a little bit about this. It was expected.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? And expected that they would fight it, so that they knew this from the beginning that this would happen. The only thing that I think is big about this is that their argument and what we've talked about of how they would dispose of the other things. Because this is a valid argument that the regulators have and was a problem with what Kroger and Albertsons was doing, is that if you you try to dispose of the overlapping stores to meet the demands that the regulators would have in some way that leaves a larger and self-sustaining kind of competitor and stuff, and not just randomly distribute the stores in all sorts of ways and stuff. And so that was always one of the arguments about the spinoff. It's been one of the issues. They had some people who were willing to buy some of it, but that's one of the big problems, is that what's left over after all these sometimes isn't that capable of taking care of itself and ends up running into bankruptcy pretty fast or something.
Yeah, it expects to close August 17th, 2024. So assuming that gets pushed back a little bit, maybe your annualized return gets hit, but the return, the spread of where it's trading at versus closing, where it closes, is about 35%. So curious to hear, is that a situation you'd still be interested in? You had said,
I'd be interested
in a bunch of M&A. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I think compared to a lot of things we're talking about, whether it's Spirit, I mean, Spirit isn't that good a company, for instance, when we talked about it, whereas Albertsons really improved things a lot. Going to an Albertsons versus going into a Kroger near you or whatever, see what they look like, how they're run. The gap has closed a lot in terms of how well Albertsons is run versus Kroger and everything. So I also think they're motivated to try to sell to somebody eventually, too. So the issue with them, though, is they do have very high results in the last few years where they had poor results before then. And so it can be hard to tell how much of that is driven by COVID and stuff, and how much of it is driven by improvements that they made in the business. But generally, I am optimistic about supermarkets in the U.S. I think that their earnings will be higher post-COVID than people think. I think people are over-assuming that they'll return to the levels they were before COVID, and I think that's wrong. So,
because of inflation?
Yeah. The cost of building Albertsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just got... I was just looking at my house and thinking, you know, I think they're overvaluing this and stuff in terms of the estimates that they have in the market value and stuff. But then, obtaining the same amount of insurance on it, the replacement value is now significantly higher. And so it's actually quite modest, the market value versus the replacement value. It's just that the replacement value has gone up so much. So the ratio of market value to replacement value on the appraisal is actually quite low. It's just that I can't believe that it can hold its value when inflation goes up that much and everything. But I mean, interest rates go up that much and everything, but inflation's gone up that much. So the actual cost to build something is so much higher that is why things can hold their value. There's not a lot of new stores open and closed in the United States, so I think people do underestimate that part of it. Yeah.
How does the real estate market come back down to earth a little bit? Does it just never happen? And, you know, rates have gone higher. A lot of people thought that prices would correct in a more meaningful way. Mortgages are at 7% or thereabouts on a 30-year fixed. How does that work itself out? Or is this the new normal? I mean, even buying a starter home in desired places, right? Look at a starter home in Dallas. It's not cheap.
Well, people can't come up with the down payment is the issue.
A starter home could be like $600,000. That's not, I think my grandparents' first house was like $80,000. It's not like it was a huge, but for a starter home, I'm saying things have really shifted, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge disconnect. They write all these articles because they're interested in these publications are often more interested in the political things than the economic things. But they write lots of articles saying, why is it that the economy is so good and people's perception of it is that it's not good? I don't know that people's perception of it is an incorrect perception and that the measures that we're talking about mean it's a good economy. I mean, by that logic, then an overheating economy is a good economy, right? I think that people will feel squeezed on some things, and so that's affecting some stuff. I mean, if you look at last year, the things that people could stop buying and stuff dropped in price. So there was big declines in good stuff, and that's what fed into inflation to make it look better. But things that they couldn't stop buying, that they have to buy, did not drop off much at all. In fact, the rate's much higher on that than other things. So that's why people feel squeezed by that. They feel like they're giving up stuff to make payments on the necessities of life, right? Because they feel like the necessities, whether that's their regular monthly bills, that's their house, that's their car, that's their whatever, are requiring higher and higher amounts. And they're claiming that they're putting off purchases of other things that you might buy at a Best Buy or a Sam's Club or whatever. And we're seeing that in the numbers from those things. And so that's why they feel that way. And they don't feel like they have a lot of disposable income and much of a safety net and stuff. And so that's why they feel negative on it. And you can see that in like sentiment numbers and stuff. Like, they're not that good versus numbers of how much people are actually spending are that good. So I don't know what will happen eventually with that, but the issue, I mean, it will be hard for people to come up with down payments for those things. Car things are interesting. I mean, they've tightened a lot. That's where I've seen the biggest differences, and car loans have tightened dramatically. Eventually, that might mean that something like America's Car Mart might have bad times now, but will be good later. Delinquencies on car loans are already higher than they were pre-pandemic, which is pretty shocking because this is what's unemployment. I mean, they're at levels that unemployment is usually 2.5% higher or something when you have these kinds of delinquency rates and stuff. I mean, the average unemployment rate probably for the periods that are being looked at here, so like let's say going back to the 70s or earlier when we talk about Fed things, would be 5-6%. So you're 1.5-2% or something lower than that normally. If you didn't know what inflation was, you wouldn't think that you're at a particularly tough part in the economy that way. I just think there's lots of indications that you might not be as tight as you think.
Yeah.
But there was huge drop-offs in goods and stuff. But that's the most transitive sort of type of inflation and stuff. It's not really inflation, like that those things surge in price and that they come down and everything. It was the same when we saw the supply chain things and stuff. It's more the stuff you're talking about. Can they afford a home and what the food bill is each month and stuff. Not just specific things, not saying, oh, orange juice is this, but the whole basket taken together is a very realistic thing to look at.
What are your thoughts on NVIDIA being up 65% year to date? We could talk a little bit about NVIDIA. They reported earnings last week or the week before, and the stock has just gone bonkers. I mean, they are growing so fast, right? Yeah. Let's see, report revenue for the fourth quarter ended January 28, 2024 of $22.1 billion, up 22% from the previous quarter. That's crazy. And up 265% from a year ago. You're seeing that price into the stock. It seems like this AI play or theme here is, you know, has no, you know, the trees are growing to the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of overheating a lot of other things as well. Just curious to hear your thoughts on NVIDIA. You know, like we talked about the bubble during 2021. Was it a bubble? Mm-hmm. Not a bubble. There's a lot of internet stocks that went crazy. A lot of those stocks have since round tripped. And I don't know, I do feel like sometimes investors, they forget about that aspect of it because there's a new shiny object. So maybe you go and you chase something new and maybe you didn't learn the lessons from the first shiny object that you had chased. But NVIDIA, the growth obviously is very real and it sounds like the addressable market is huge. So maybe NVIDIA is not like other internet companies during 2021 that have round tripped. 2020 and 2021, but just want to hear your thoughts on NVIDIA, the growth, and ultimately the movement that has happened in the stock this year. It's just been crazy to watch.
So, I mean, the, as a stock, the issue with NVIDIA and with lots of other ones, is it's not just NVIDIA, is even if the company's great, that the prices that we're talking about are really high. So we always warn you when it's like 10 times sales or higher, well, these things are way beyond that in some cases. So that's the worrying part. The other worrying part is what we talked about with like coal, actually, the other podcast. We talked about met coal, basically. And yep, we talked about how that you have these things. I gave the example of like Encore Wire, which is a very successful company that does copper wire stuff. But if you look at their long-term history, they only earn above 10% or so returns on their capital in those years where there's a shortage, basically. So in 2006-07, they earn it, and then they earn it again during COVID. All the other time, they're just hoping, let's just try to get close to a 10% return on our money. Let's just keep, not really add a lot of value, but preserve it. And then these periods of shortage. What you'll see with NVIDIA is the gross margin stuff, right? So it's shortage. They make a lot of money when there's a shortage. No doubt about that. And so it's a question of, does that shortage exist forever? Does that shortage stop at some point? You know, because I was looking at something that was doing projections out, and they project gross margin. And they project gross margin at, I think, 77% or higher, the analysts that I was seeing. Through the end of 2026, maybe, certainly through the end of 2025. So we're talking, you know, I don't know, we're talking at least 6 or 7 quarters, and maybe even longer than that, that the analysts have projections for this out, which means that they project it to be in a condition of being quite short supply. And yeah, that's true. If you're selling something that everyone wants and you can price to the moon, then the business can be really, really successful for as long as that condition exists, right? And it's a question of how long that continues.
And the market, competition, stuff like that coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My feeling on this, you know, that worries me more than say concentration, a few number of stocks and stuff, is the Mag 7 stuff. These things are related to each other. And so I think it's important to not overdo that, that like, if people are like, people are really excited about like generative AI stuff, and they're really excited about people who are supplying chips to that stuff. And they're really excited about the companies that are using that. And it's one company's sales are the other company's CapEx, is the, you know, and so we're having a bit of a problem that way. I would feel a lot more confident if it was something that they were doing that the stocks were unrelated to each other. And so that is very, very similar to the internet boom, which is similar to the railroad boom. I mean, the internet boom thing was long duration assets that people were spending on, that they were all actually really related to each other and spending all this way, and people couldn't even see all the connections between some of it. So like Berkshire had the problem with furniture rental, but not everyone saw that furniture rental was related to the number of startups. The number of startups was related to the, you know, that this was driving things. And so the way in which that was all working together is a bit of a problem. And so I do worry about that with these. I think that this is maybe doesn't spread out to the rest of the economy as big as people think, but we'll see. Everyone's very excited about the applications of this stuff, and it will be a very different world when this is put into a lot of use and stuff. But the actual capital spending does seem to be concentrated in a small number of companies who are related to each other and whose stocks trade on the same part of the same index and stuff.
Do you have any predictions for the rest of the year? I mean, coming into this, you had said expectations were super high.
Yeah.
It seems like some of those expectations have been pushed back though, and the stock market is, you know, is still tearing. I mean, obviously that takes time to work itself out. We're only almost 3 months into the year. Any predictions or anything?
Yeah, same sort of things as before, but more so. The expectations are even higher now, and the numbers in terms of inflation and stuff like that is not good. So, rates and stuff. So, but you know, it'll last until it doesn't. So, I mean, there've been, you know, like if you had told people how high rates would be now and where stock prices would be, they wouldn't believe it. So we have no idea what it'll be like when those things do happen, and whether rates coming down and stuff doesn't match as much with people's expectations. It could be that rates come down and the market doesn't do that well because of where expectations were when it happens. You know, you want to be careful with any of these rule of thumb things. As long as, you know, it's just what is it expecting versus what actually happens. That's the issue. And so that's the only reason why I said that about, I mean, the really two big things is the market overall, the Magnificent Seven type stuff, and especially electric vehicles, I thought was way out of line with the underlying reality. The Magnificent Seven stuff, though, if people are pricing on the most recent earnings, you know, if you just put some of the highest PE multiples on some great earnings, it can last for a long time because it won't be till it starts to come down.
Yeah.
But what happened in the dot-com bust is that their earnings kept going up by a lot at the same time their stocks cratered, which could happen here if your multiple is too high, you know. But I wouldn't be surprised if their earnings are great for a while, absolutely. I mean, this is something that everyone wants to spend on. Anything that you look at is always talking about how they're going to be doing this and what they can apply it to in all sorts of industries. It hasn't happened in those yet that they're spending a lot, but we see it in finance things and other stuff that's something that they want to do.
Do you ever feel like a broken record?
Mm-hmm.
For always thinking that stocks are expensive and never cheap? Like, sometimes I do wonder, I'm like,
yeah,
has the game changed from the perspective of passive flows and quants and the way that there's price discovery and things in the market? I mean, someone even sent me something somewhat recently of looking at not even a public company, but it was a private thing, and how they can pinpoint certain data points based on the amount of cell phones that were mm-hmm. in that area, and you could kind of get data from there and whatnot. I was just thinking, I'm like, man, you know, price discovery is so different. And if something's cheap, is it cheap because it's not a temporary thing? It's cheap for a reason. I don't know. I mean, you just look at how much expectations have been pushed out, like with interest rates and cutting rates, but it does, at least it just doesn't seem like it matters yet. And is that because of passive flows and cash and ETFs and mutual funds and this and that? I don't know. Sometimes I sound like a broken record. Always thinking, you know.
The market is much more expensive since shortly after 1996 to today than it was before then. So it had a big, huge increase for a few years, which you talk about the dot-com period. But actually, even outside of that, from a bit before 1997 to a bit after, like maybe 2001 or so, it wasn't super cheap, but it wasn't that big a blow up there. I mean, Shiller PE things, I think, were a double probably what we normally are. And theoretically, you're at rates where that shouldn't be happening, and why expectations for future rates would be low, I don't know. So, I mean, my feeling on this always is, there's a huge amount of stickiness in people's thought process. And so there's a huge amount of momentum in any of these things. And it takes a while for people to realize a pivot or something in one way or another. They don't incorporate it. You don't see things drop and then not bounce back. If you have things down, then they come up after that in these sorts of things. We're talking about broad stuff. So we'll see what happens, but I would be surprised if while we're going through it, we know, we understand what's happening and the predictions are correct. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that, that, you know, markets have been kind of expensive for much of the time that we've been investing. And so you had to get comfortable with those sorts of levels. And it does happen. I was talking to someone who, you know, bought Microsoft recently, and they know that Microsoft's a wonderful company, all the things that they had before, but they also know they're paying probably four times more than they paid the last time they bought Microsoft. So, because they bought at the bottom before, you know, and it's really
psychologically, I imagine that's pretty tough to do.
I think for most people, after just never getting a good price for, except maybe if these things, even during COVID.
Say, I'll go long. Screw it, I'll go long.
I think everyone adjusts eventually to using the multiples and stuff that they've seen in the last few years. But, you know, but we should point out, look, the Nikkei, what, week or two ago, finally hit the level that it was at in 19, what was that? Let's see. So it would have been probably 33 years, 35 years. How long has it been? Yeah, something like that. So it was down over a period of 30 to 35 years. It didn't reach the level that it was at before. So no one was thinking that that would happen, that it would take that long. And it's not astoundingly cheap now at that level. It's all right, but it's not amazingly cheap. So that tells you something that people really believed in that at that time. So, you know, people have adjusted their things to saying, will China pass the United States and be the biggest economy and stuff? Whereas before it was, when would it, how long would it last and everything? So they've made the same adjustments with Japan or whatever. It takes a long time for people to change their opinions on that kind of thing. So I think if the Shiller P is at 35 and stays there for 5 years, everyone will believe it's normal. If it drops to 12 and stays there for 5 years, people will write articles about what's changed to justify that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks a bounce back in a year or two or something, but you boil people like a frog for 5 years or something in something, they believe that that's normal again, you know?
Sure. So. Got it. Cool. Well, I thank everybody so much for tuning in with the both of us on the Focused Compounding Podcast. If this is the first time you're joining us, be sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you are listening or watching us. If you're interested in learning about our money management services, you can reach out to me at andrew@focusedcompounding.com. Happy to start that conversation, or go to focusedcompounding.com and click that Invest With Us tab to get more information on that. I thank everybody so much for all the support, and we will see you in the next podcast. Take care.